The Pat Kenny Show.
With the Jaguar E-Pace. Beautiful by design and dynamic to drive. Delivering performance that is unmistakably Jaguar.
This is News Talk.
Life is too short to read a bad book, so said Dublin's most famous literary son, James Joyce, a writer who came back to the capital again and again throughout his work. Dublin, One City, One Book is a Dublin City Council initiative led by Dublin City Libraries that encourages reading for pleasure through a myriad of free public events throughout the month of April. And this year's choice for Dublin, One City, One Book is Christine Dwyer Hickey's excellent 2004 novel, Tatty. Now, to talk about that and the fantastic initiative of Dublin One City One Book is the woman herself, Christine Dwyer Hickey. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
And I have to mea culpa because I haven't read Tatty. I'm now going to read Tatty because it's going to come out in a brand new spanking edition.
Yeah, it's already out, I think. It's a lovely edition. A much bolder edition. Looks like a different kettle of fish to the timid Tatty from the 2004 edition. But same publisher, and you probably won't be able to get away from it. They're going to put banners up along the Liffey. I'm just afraid I'm going to be driving the car when that happens if I see it. But anyway, it'll be everywhere.
Swim Two Birds by Flann O'Brien.
Yeah.
The Picture of Dorian Gray by Oscar Wilde. Strumpet City by James Plunkett. These are past nominees for Dublin One City One Book.
And don't forget Dubliners by James Joyce.
Dubliners by James Joyce, of course.
As soon as you mentioned
it. Great company to be in.
Oh, I'm full of myself now for about a week. But it is a great company to be in. It really is.
When did you get news that this might be happening? Because this is a book that did not come out today or yesterday. It came out in 2004.
That's right. And it's a funny book because every time I think that Tatty is finished, she pops up again somewhere else. It's only 3 years ago that it was in Estonia. Then it's in Arabic. We did about 2 years ago in a really very exotic edition in Arabic where they draw little pictures on the top of each page. There's little illustrations of it. And I thought that was funny and interesting. And I wish I could see the reaction because one of the themes in it is alcoholism. And of course, the Arab world, so alcohol is banned. So it's kind of interesting to see what they saw in it because it's done very well there.
And did you get it translated back from the Arabic?
They get it translated through Literature Ireland, which is a great institution we have here, and Sinead Mackay. But it's checked. She has someone check it to make sure it's the proper translation.
That it's true to the original.
True to it, yeah.
Tell us about Tatty then, for those who haven't read it yet and obviously are about to be seduced into reading it again. What's it about?
Well, just to tell you a little bit about it, it started off not as a novel. It started off for me as a sort of exercise in therapy where I was trying to make sense of my childhood. And I had no intention of turning it into a novel. I was actually advised to do it because of all sorts of issues. My father had died about 2 years previously and I was having trouble coming to terms with it. And the past was beginning to haunt me and all that kind of stuff. So I was advised to write the story and write it from a child's point of view and to step back from it. So I did that. And after a while, then the writer started saying, hey, this isn't bad. We could turn this into a novel. And I was sort of saying, no, it's therapy. It's not a novel. But bit by bit, the novelist won out. And I'm glad now. I'm glad now it did. So anyway, basically, it's the story of a family, a Dublin family in the 60s and 70s. And it's told from the perspective of one of the children. Her nickname is Tatty. And she starts off the book opens when she's about five, I think. And then she grows chapter by chapter, she grows a year older. So it's episodic and her voice has to change and her perspective of the world has to change. And her mom and dad are having a lot of problems and alcohol is a feature. And she doesn't understand it in the beginning and then she begins to understand it. So that's really what it's about.
And people are saying, well, are you Tatty then?
I am Tatty. I'll be honest. At the time now, when it came out in 2004, I'd be shot
No,
it's not me. But I think now it's a lot different. And you know something, Pat? I got so many letters from people all over the world about Tatty, and I still get them, that I'm thinking, I think now it's a good opportunity to talk about, it's a whole set of people, adult children of alcoholics, and people who don't know what's wrong with them, or they're not sure why in adulthood that there's this constant, it might be anxiety or people pleasing or an unhappiness that they can't find a cause for.
fundamental to the dynamic then for Tatty within the family? Is she the peacemaker or what?
Well, there's always different roles that they take, because you see, that is, as we were talking about this at the launch yesterday, and I was the first time I really said it, that the disease of alcoholism, it's a strange disease because it's sort of the disease that cannot dare not speak its name. The alcoholic can talk about it and they can, you know, get redemption and peace with themselves with it. But if a member of the family breaks ranks and speaks, there's a huge amount of guilt involved and you feel like you've betrayed something. And, you know, it's a very secretive thing.
You're saying that often the view is from outside is that the only person who's suffering here is the alcoholic who's doing himself or herself down and destroying their life. But there are other lives.
But it's a disease that it is recognised by all the professions that it's a disease that affects the whole family. And within the family, there are generally speaking roles that different children take.
And do they take them at different times depending on their stage of development, or do they tend to be locked? One child will take on a particular role.
No, it depends on the dynamic of the family.
Yeah.
Like in a case where, like in Tatty's case, both parents had a problem with alcohol. That would mean it would be different. Something would happen. Something would be different. But generally, there's a kind of a hero, and there's a caretaker, and there's the lost child that kind of hides from it all, and there's, you know, the enabler that makes up the excuses and makes the phone calls and all that sort of stuff. So
enabling is one of the things that it most fascinates me about any person who has bad behaviour of one kind or another and the people that allow it to happen. But very difficult to shout stop. Very difficult to escape from the house and maybe embarrass the whole family calling a halt to it or admitting to an employer, for example, by the way, the reason he's not in today or she's not in today is because they were hammered last night and they can't speak this morning.
Yeah, I know. So in order to allow the family to survive in one way or another, lies are told. And in the book, in the novel, Tatty tells fierce lies to cover up. She just finds it easier to tell fantastic ideas come into her head, and she just makes them up rather than be caught out telling the lie.
Now, the writing of this book, it wasn't your first book.
No, it was my fourth novel. Yeah, it was my fourth.
So what drew you to writing? You were already kind of in your own head, I am a writer, when you started this exercise in therapy.
Yeah.
What drew you to writing in the first place?
I don't know. I think when I was a little girl, I used to lie in bed at night and rewrite the day. I change it, you know, I used to change the day. And because children get this idea into their head sometimes that they're responsible for certain things. And that's where it began. And I was also a great reader, and I used to sneak into books and just hide inside a book. And to me, that was my coping mechanism when I was a child. So that just stayed with me. It seemed like a natural thing to do.
So you were escaping from some of the harsh realities of domestic life into a book. But
A lot of kids do that too. I know a lot of people do that. But for me, it was something deeper that I really kind of believed the books, and it just meant an awful lot to me to read and to become part of a story, I think.
Immersed, literally immersed
in it, and protected.
Ideas for books. Tatty was born of your own experience, but you've written many books, and we've talked to you on the show about your various works over the years. Where does inspiration come from?
Different places. Like during the events for Tatty, one of the things that I'm going to be talking about in Liberty Hall, one of the events, I think it's on the 23rd of April, it's music and the imagination. Music is a huge part of my creative process, if you like. And so Niall McMonagall is going to interview me about how that works. And we have live musicians. I'd love to give them a quick plug if I could.
Sure.
Leonora Carney is going to be playing the pianist. Yeah, you know her. Donica Dwyer is actually my brother's Ilan Piper. And Colin Byrne is a trumpet player. So they're going to play, and we're going to talk about, we're going to explore the creative process in that. As to the rest of the books, I have no idea where they come from. One thing leads to another. And before you know it, it turns into something else. So that's how most of my novels come.
We won't preempt Niall McMonagall's except in one question. I mean, you mentioned people who are instrumentalists.
Yeah.
I mean, do you ever get inspired by the snippets of a popular song, for instance? Because sometimes the writing of a popular song, I always quote Sylvia's Mother as one of the best narratives that I've come across in a song.
Yeah.
Very dramatic. it's irrelevant now because you don't have phone boxes anymore.
A lot of things. That's the big problem.
But
yeah.
The narrative is so gripping. And
yeah, I like songs with that, with a narrative in it. I have to say, I do like them. But these are just all instrumental because it's mood and it's because it gives a shape to my imagination. And I don't know why it happens. We'll explore that further. But yeah, I know what you mean about the... that thing, the Lions Man, you know that I'm the Wichita Lions Man. Yeah, that's a brilliant song.
Brilliant song, Jimmy Webb song.
A whole different story. There's a whole story and a whole life that you don't even know.
But country music has a tendency to come up with some great little notions. Yeah. I mean, the title of the song, "Why Have You Left the One You Left Me For?" I mean, there's a whole world in that.
And one of my little things, ideas that I have, I'd love sometime to do it, is to the songs of Bob Dylan. The Blood on the Tracks album. I'd love to write short stories around that.
Each track being a short story, even though they're kind of short stories already.
But yeah. I'd like to expand on that at some stage.
Now, few writers wrote about the capital with such evocation as James Joyce.
Oh yes, I'm going to be exploring him too.
Okay.
In the Joyce Centre. I'll put another plug in again. This is for Alison Lyons and Jackie Lynham and all the girls in the UNESCO who've been helping me to for this thing to happen. But anyway. In the Joyce Centre, I'm going to explore the notion of James Joyce as the adult child of an alcoholic and how it affected him and how it affected his family. Because the term alcoholic wasn't used, I think, until the 40s maybe. But his father was larger than life, great crack outside and all the rest of it. But he was a chronic alcoholic.
Yeah.
And I think that affected
James Joyce.
So I'm going to be looking at that too.
I was wondering though if his writing about Dublin, whether you know, so famously in Ulysses that they said you could reconstruct Dublin were it to be destroyed from the pages of the book, but in Dubliners and everywhere else, does he cast a shadow?
Oh, he always casts a shadow, but a very welcome shadow, I think. I love James Joyce. I love the man, and I love his brother Stanley as well. I love him. I just love their whole. I relate to them, I think, but I love the way he deals with his writing and Dublin, and I've always been inspired by him, I have to say. Not just the way he uses the city, but also the way he can get inside someone's head, and that's the way I've always tried to write myself.
And I suppose we shouldn't forget the late Jimmy Plunkett and Strumpet City, which captures a particular Dublin.
Yeah,
so
it does. Yeah,
so
it does. There's some great, and they're not all dead, mind you. There's other like Joseph O'Connor's. I can't remember half of them now. Liam Mills and Edna O'Brien last year, the Country Girls. You don't have to be dead to be UNESCO One City, One Book.
We recently had a chat with Edna O'Brien
about
her latest book. She's indefatigable.
Oh, yes. And, I know. She's an inspiration to us all.
Anyway, the book is called Tatty. It's this year's choice for Dublin City, One Book. And the author, Christian Dwyer Hickey. Congratulations.
Thank you very
we'll
much.
We'll all be reading it
I'm
in the next
delighted.
Little while.
Thank you.
And thanks very much for joining us.
Okay, thanks for having me.